Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to The Man's Voice. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday. This show is, you know, put together so that people like those of you that are listening can call in and join in with us. We're like, you know, like talking with around the table for Thanksgiving. I'm sure there were a lot of conversations about what's going on in the world, and we want to get, you know, drill down into them and talk about them. But let me first say welcome to the panel. How was your Thanksgiving, guys?
Okay, it was great. Thank you for asking.
Wonderful.
Well, I'm glad. I know I all did. I did see some pictures on the internet of people's meals and things, and you know, glad everyone had a good time. It looks like Mr. Castro died. And I know that there's a lot of conversation around about the United States and the sanctions that we had on Cuba. We lifted them recently under Mr. Obama's watch. But I don't think people really understand. And Ron, your heritage is Cuban. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. How are you feeling about Mr. Castro passing? Because I know, well, tell us about your family and its history with that whole thing that happened in Cuba and the United States.
Sure, more than happy to. First of all, I was born here. My dad is American from Kentucky, and my mom came from Cuba in 1961, I believe, give or take, you know, maybe a year. You know, that was like almost right after Fidel Castro took control of the island nation. And, you know, his passing really, I mean, it surprised me. I knew it was coming eventually. So, but it didn't catch me off guard. I wasn't emotional about it. Like Cubans who had to leave their home, you know, and there's a lot of those still here in Miami. And if you go around, you know, the different neighborhoods, Hialeah and Little Havana and other places, you see hundreds and even thousands of Cubans out celebrating because they are full of joy that, you know, this dictator and murderer has died. But, you know, on the other hand, the reality of it and the practicality of it is that nothing is going to change. It's still a dictatorship. You know, his brother, his younger brother, and they say younger, but he's 85 years old, Raul Castro, you know, the transfer of power took place, I think it was like 10 years ago. So nothing is going to change in terms of the dictatorship. You know, and even I would go out as far as say that even after Raul is gone, you know, it's still going to be a dictatorship because it's the system that's been in place for so long. And yes, there's a lot of people that that live inside Cuba that are against the system, but they're not really, you know, they're not really free to complain or say much about it because of fear of repercussion. And, you know, people have been killed and there's horror stories. And, you know, going back to my family and as so many others, you know, when they left Cuba, basically when Castro took over, he took over their homes, he took over their businesses. He took over their money, their bank accounts, everything. So they were left penniless. And when they came here, you know, they relied on the U.S. government to survive, basically. So, you know, it's to me, it's actually kind of perplexing how such a small country in relation to the United States has had so much power over 11, if I'm not mistaken, 11 U.S. presidents, and a couple of them have tried to kill them, and they haven't been able to. And, you know, we've got this communist country less than 90 miles, actually swimming distance, and some people have swam between Havana and the Lower Keys, less than 90 miles away from our shores, and we've got this, you know, strong dictatorship that, you know, has beaten us, you know, in so many ways. And so now that Trump is thinking of turning back, you know, what Obama did, I think is senseless. I mean, I don't see the purpose of it. I know that there's Cubans like Senator Marco Rubio who feel otherwise, and they say that, you know, until Cuba is 100% free and people are able to vote and pick their leaders and do whatever they want and not be in a dictatorship, that they want to continue the sanctions and you know, stop the free travel, which, by the way, American Airlines just like 2 or 3 days ago officially started their free flights. In other words, anybody can go now as a tourist between South Florida and different parts of Cuba. So, you know, it's a time of celebration for a lot, but for me, it's just really, you know, it's just another day. I mean, it didn't really impact me.
But Ron, let me ask a question, because one of the things that I've always heard was one of the major reasons for the takeover of the government by Fidel Castro was because of the elitist way that the people in Cuba were treating the, because it was a caste system. And if you weren't part of the upper echelon, you were treated very bad. And so Castro was for the people. Most of them were there because they were slave ships that had gotten lost and ended up there, or got there before they came to the United States, renaming the slaves so they could get into the United States. And wasn't it because that Castro fought for these people was the reason that most of the people got expelled from Cuba? Because they were a lot of doctors, lawyers, and teachers, but they were the elitists, and they treated you weren't allowed to do a lot of things because you weren't up at what the whole revolution was about.
Well, you know, that's a good point, and I don't know that much about Cuban history. So, you know, if I commented on that, I'd be probably mistaken to do so. But, you know, I have heard that he came into power because of what you just said, but that he also deceived the people is what I've heard. And it sounds pretty familiar to what's going on right now in the U.S. I mean, people will say whatever you want to hear to get into power. And then once you're in power, the whole thing can turn around and all hell can break loose. And again, I don't know much about the history of how he came to power or why, but I know that obviously I don't think anybody would disagree that this person has disrupted hundreds and thousands and hundreds of thousands of lives and killed so many people, his regime and his dictatorship. And, you know, it's just, to me, not he's an evil person in my mind, you know.
Okay.
And so whether he had good intentions or not at the beginning, I don't really
right.
know.
You said, you know, he got in power because he was supposedly going to do good, but then it turned into more of a dictatorship where he was getting rid of people. Mr. Don, I know you're down there. Do you see any thing going on or any celebrating or anything? How do you feel about what's going on down in Miami right now?
I think Ron summed it up very well. Hialeah is like Mardi Gras, party time. Everybody's celebrating that Castro is dead. You know, I think President Obama opened the door He didn't know that Castro was going to die, but he had a feeling someday he would die. But the door has been opened, and they're 90 miles away from where we are currently located. And it's going to be an economic bonanza because they need everything. And if Donald Trump is going to make good on his pledge or his sayings in the campaign economically, he's got to do it. And I think Cuba may be in the equation. What do you think about that, Ron?
Well, you know, I think economics is certainly a huge part of this. But what I say is, you know, the United States has been probably the only country that has not been able for its citizens to freely travel to and from Cuba. And yet you've got all the European countries and many countries around the world that have daily flights to Cuba. They have hotels or the tourists flock there. And it's good, in my opinion, for both countries. So I don't really see what the embargo, I don't really see what it has done, you know, how it has positively impacted our relationship. I mean, I don't think it has done a thing, basically. And to me, what bothers me is that, you know, China is the biggest, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the biggest communist country in the world. And yet, I can travel freely to China anytime I want. I can go online right now and book a flight between Miami and Shanghai with no restrictions. Had I tried to do that, and I did months ago or years ago between Miami and Cuba, a big red sentence would come across my screen saying that travel is not allowed or restricted between the U.S. and Cuba. So that, to me, that makes no sense.
All right. Through some research I was doing, I've been looking at the Cuban people, and it seems to me they're fearing a Trump future without Fidel, because they kind of thought that Fidel was the one who managed the politics of the country and that the United States was not fair to them. And without Fidel, they're not sure what's going to happen. I think they're a little afraid of Trump and the things that he's said. And now the embargo is gone, and now Fidel is gone. So I think we're going to have to stand back and just keep an eye on that and watch that and talk about it as it happens. But Ron or Don, are you guys thinking about going to Cuba? Ron, are you going?
I am.
I am too. I am. I really am, because I got some friends down here that are really thinking about going to Cuba. In fact, I'm looking at it from a media standpoint, because once that radio television embargo opens up, they're going to need everything.
Okay, I have one word for both of you. Cigars.
Yeah, this is Frank.
Sure.
I wanted to contribute a little bit on it. You know that we had the Bay of Pigs. You guys have heard about that. You know that part of the financing for the overthrow of the Batista government, which is the government prior to Fidel's government, was financed by the United States. And Fidel was also educated partly in the United States. The Batista, they had the mob was located in Cuba and ran casinos and party boats. And there were things like prostitution, which probably still exist. And there was a different class of people, as you pointed out, David. And as they went towards communism, of course, people vacated the island and left their goods or things there. So in South America and in Africa, Fidel Castro was considered a hero. One of the reasons for that is that he has provided medical missions to all of those countries, including Haiti. Most of the doctors or practically all the doctors in Haiti have been trained in Cuba. In Africa and in South America, he's provided these medical battalions. He has medical battalion, and he provided soldiers to liberate countries in Africa. And some of that liberation is considered to be taking place in South America also. So, again, the people are partying in Miami because he's deceased. And in other places in the world, they're moaning because he's deceased. Lastly, I'll just point out, I know a lot of Americans who used to go to Cuba on a regular basis because it is 90 miles from Key West. And they would spend the weekend there, and it was open. It was open town with a lot of American fun, pre-Las Vegas. That was the locale. And I don't expect it'll ever get back to that, but I do expect that the reasoning that we have been so much against Cuba is that we have a significant Cuban population resident in Florida, and it's kind of thrown in our face, as you mentioned. Why, you know, because why can't we go to China, which is a communist nation, but you can't go to Cuba? And the reason for that is because Cuba is in our hemisphere, so it's an embarrassment to the United States promotion of democracy to have countries in the Americas that have went the Soviet route or kind in government processing. So that's the deal on that from my perspective.
All right. I do know one of the things that you said that I remember is Cuba has some of the best medical schools in the world. I know people go there to be trained, and we used to send people there from the United States. So although we get a bad view of Cuba under Castro, I also get that there were things going on that we've been negated on getting the correct news about what's going on in that country. But I hope, you know, my only thing is I'm hoping the country, you know, thrives and moves on. Does anybody know after, because it was a dictatorship, now Junior Castro is running the country. Who runs it after him? I mean, who's next on the list? Does it go back to democracy?
It's a communist nation, so they've got a political bureau, and normally it's the first secretary that takes over in a communist type regime. So unless they change their type of government, you should see someone from the Communist Party, just like in China.
He's being groomed now. I heard his name yesterday, but I can't recall his name, but he is being groomed now.
Yeah, because the brother is in the 80s, right? So he's fairly
old
himself.
He's 85.
Right.
Yeah, he's 85.
Huh. All right. Let's just hope that, you know, they're 60 miles outside of Florida. Let's hope everything, you know, goes well
90,
for them.
90 miles.
Pardon me?
90 miles.
90 miles? Okay.
90 miles.
Okay. Let's hope everything goes well. And for those of you that are going to go, I've always wanted to go there enjoy the country, because I know that at one time it was the place to go. And I hope it gets back to that. Frank, can you tell us a little bit, because I know you did some posting on the internet, and I was going to bring it up today, but I noticed that you were doing some posting. Tell us what you know about Standing Rock, and tell us about the veteran piece that's going to happen for Standing Rock. Do you know much about it?
I can give you a little synopsis of it. There's some pipeline people who have permission to drill underneath a river. The river is where the tribal nation it gets their water, and they're concerned that at some time, and there's already piping under that river, by the way, from previously, but this would be new piping, which they have permission by the government to do. Part of the lands are federal lands, okay, but again, there is a the relationship with the water, and they have been holding a standoff there. More and more citizens in the United States have joined their cause. There's been a fire hoses, you know, cold water being sprayed on people in frigid conditions. There's been people beaten in the head and arrested. These are people who are demonstrating, of course. And so people are petitioning the president to not do the pipeline, to respect the First Nation of people. And the First Nation is asking for everyone to join their cause. And they appeal to Afro-Americans because they indicated to them that during the time of their enslavement, their reservations were a place of hope and escape. So their appeal to people that are homosexual, etc., to come to their aid at this particular time to save them from having to have this drilling of underneath their waters. And these are oil pipelines, gas pipelines, oil.
And this has been going on for quite a while.
It has been going on more than a few months.
Yeah. And the Native Americans are up in arms about this, and they've done all kinds of things to these people trying to get them out of the way. What do you know about this, Don? What kind of opinion do you have about what's going on?
I am totally excited about them being proactive about stopping them from drilling. I came from Flint, Michigan, and Flint, Michigan was a prime example of us messing with the water system. We're talking about water and digging under the water with oil, pipelines. And you know oil and water does not mix. Now, on the other hand, coming from Michigan, we're looking at a state that's surrounded by water. And we got lead in the water in Flint, Michigan. So why don't we leave the water alone? I disagree with the Indians. Leave the water alone.
Wait a minute. Was that Frank said he disagreed with the Indians? Who said that?
I think that was a misstatement. I think he tried to say he was in agreement with the Indians.
Oh,
but,
okay.
It came out disagreement, yes.
Okay. I thought I heard disagreeing there somewhere. All right.
I agree with the Indians. We need to leave the water alone, David. And you know what?
I'm really
watching to see what Trump is going to do on that issue.
Well, let me just add a little bit to this. That my concern, anytime you have an industry that gets permission to do something, they don't maintain their equipment. So that means if it's 50 years from now, if it's 30 years from now,
yes,
that'll get turned back over to the government because it's on federal land, and then it'll find out that they used some cheap material or they didn't maintain. They'll be gone off. Either the company will have dissolved itself, or I don't know you, and it'll be leaking, needing repair, and the federal government will be the only one able to come to the rescue.
Amen.
You know? And so that's the problem. Anytime you let a commercial business come in on federal government lands, they won't maintain it for the history of that property.
I know that there's a group of veterans led by last name Wood. He's a veteran.
Yeah.
That are banding together to go down there and support the Native Americans on keeping the government off their land. And I go for that. I mean, when do you see veterans who usually come out as a group? Usually they're, you know, told to stay away, and your veterans do what America wants you to do, don't do anything else. But here is a group of veterans going to say, we support the Native Americans and stop drilling on their land. Don't put the pipeline in there. So I think we should, I'm really impressed with that. I want to keep an eye on that and see how it goes. Frank, what do you think about that? Because, you know, you're a veteran also.
No,
I'm for it.
What do you think? No, I agree. The veterans, I mean, they're asking for all types of people to be in solidarity. Veterans have chosen to do that. There are many people who are arriving there at that location on a daily basis. It's sort of like a civil rights movement. And so you've got more and more people showing up there and in protest and in solidarity with the Native Americans.
Right. All right. Our future president, our president-elect, Trump, is now spewing negative comments to Clinton about the – because in Wisconsin, there's a Green Party candidate. Her name is Jill Stein, and she is asking for a recount. So Mrs. Clinton said, okay, if you're going to do that, we support it. So now the president-elect is all up in arms about that, saying, you know, after he said that he wasn't going to prosecute her, why would she do that? But wasn't he the one that said he wasn't going to take the election if she won in the first place? So why would this? What do you think about this, Don? I mean, I think it's kind of crazy.
Well, you know, he just president-elect just came out and said he would get another million votes if they did it anyway because of all the illegal votes. And illegal voters that voted. I can't believe how we waste millions and millions of dollars. You know, those millions and millions of dollars can go towards something else. We either vote that we need to go with the electoral vote, or we vote that we need to go with the popular vote. Now, they put the electoral vote into play so that the smaller population of country of states in the United States would have a voice. Because if you go with the popular vote, most candidates would campaign in Florida, New York, California, and they would win just by the popular vote in that area, the areas I just stated. But, you know, that's never going to happen, in my opinion. I think it'll always be the electoral vote.
There's a big push to change it. I mean, even Bernie Sanders now is saying we need to rethink the electrical college. I don't know. But why is he, you know, I just don't get him coming out against anybody right now and about anything. I think he needs to take care of business the way he should be taking care of business, worrying about spewing negative all over the place, all the time. Every time you hear something from our president-elect, it's a negative piece. And when does he start being positive? I don't know if it's ever going to happen, if it's going to come to that. What do you think, Frank? I just don't understand it, but what do you think about this?
Well, I think that's just a deflection. Right now, what he's trying to do is consolidate power as the presidential elect and settle things that he's the winner. And by doing the recount, which I agree there should be a recount, and it should be in those border states in the Great Lakes region area as a sampling, and it may have to go beyond the three states if they find what the scientists believe existed. And if you look at some of the small towns in there, you will find that there were 1,000 more voters, for instance, that voted for Trump than humans who lived in the town. So you have towns of 500 or 600 people that have votes for Trump for 1,600 and 1,700. And the total population is no more than 600. So that's the problem with the system that we have. Additionally, the other part of the problem is that when they do the recount, there's also going to be further time to take a look at the influence that the Russians have had on our election. That's really a sad part, because what we've also allowed to happen is we've allowed the Russian system to influence our people and our democracy. So that's why Trump is complaining. He cannot right now. Hillary Clinton is leading the vote by people over 2 million. And so if you go ahead and audit those three states and you find out that he didn't win those states, for instance, then electoral votes are going to shift from his pocket to her pocket, and you may be on to something at that point.
Right. But because what you just said was there were more votes that were illegal for Trump, and so that, you know, it might turn on.
That's
him.
Right. Yeah, there's three towns there that have a couple of towns already admitted that they told a story. Okay, so there's some small towns there with 500 or 600 people, and one or two of them have already admitted that they padded the vote count.
Wow. What do you think about this, Ron?
Well, you know, I logically, if there's any doubt and uncertainty, which there is, then I believe wholeheartedly that there needs to be an investigation, a recount, and I agree with Frank that, you know, if the Russians were behind disrupting our democratic process, you know, that needs to be looked into. I mean, that's major league, a crime right there, a cyber crime that they may have committed. So, but going back to the comment that Don made about, you know, that he doesn't think that it's ever going to go to popular vote. My simplistic mind understands the popular vote. I mean, I understand the Electoral College. I understand why that's in place and how it all works. But to me, you know, a straightforward, majority vote should win. And, you know, so what that it's only Florida and Texas and California and New York, as long as it represents the majority of the people in the country. You know, it's not my fault that nobody wants to live in Nebraska or Oklahoma, you know. So as long as the wishes of the majority of the people in the country are represented, I think that's fine with me. Even if it diminishes the importance of the smaller states. I mean, I don't personally see anything wrong with that.
What about you, Don?
I really kind of agree with you, Ron. I really would like to see the population or the popular vote get into play. But I just don't think it'll happen simply because we've been doing the electoral votes for so long. It's going to take a earthquake for us to get to the level of accepting a popular vote. That's going to be, oh my God, that's going to be... It's unbelievable. I don't think it will happen. I just don't think it will happen.
But isn't, and maybe Frank knows this, aren't the majority of the countries around the world using popular vote as the system?
Yeah, they use it. You know, we're one of the few countries that has this type of systems. But our forefathers that opened this country up, I guess if you look at it, what's the glue that binds us together? If you don't have the Electoral College and you happen to be a small state, then you might feel being put up on by a larger state like California or New York. So the glue, I think, was that, hey, if it's Electoral College, you get a chance to vote and you have a better weight factor, not a fair weight factor, but it's a fair weight factor if all states are equal, okay, no matter what their size are. And that's a problem in concept because they didn't have California when they started this college. And California is the fifth largest country or the eighth largest country in the world as far as from a financial aspect. So I think that the Electoral College and I think it's going to stay in existence, but I would think that it's going to have to be reworked by the numbers, and I think also that may entail having more than two senators in a given state.
Right. All right.
Because you know it isn't fair for like California to have to put up with the rest of the United States. Okay. I'm a native California. I'm a native Californian, okay?
Right. Florida either, actually.
Well, they can always, Frank, they can always succeed, secede, right?
No, they're
well,
trying
yeah,
to. They just passed they just passed a ruling that they're now California's trying to succeed.
Well, California's going to fall into the ocean anyway.
They've been falling in the ocean ever since I was born.
They'll become an island just like Cuba. There you go.
Wait a minute. For those of you that live in Florida, you know, Florida is supposed to be underwater by the end of the century. So everybody's saying you better
move
to Georgia. Georgia will be the farthest state, the southernmost farthest state by the turn of the century.
You'll have oceanfront property, David.
I know. Georgia will be the thing. I know. One of the things that is going on with the new administration is the first thing that they're trying to do is to dismantle the Obamacare. But aren't there like 2 million people that are in this program now? And I guess it will have to come out what happens to these people. But
20 million.
Pardon me?
20
million. Yes. 20 million people that are in Obamacare right now.
New,
it's not Obamacare. It's what everybody calls it. We understand
it's
by that
Affordable
name.
Care Act. It's the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
And there were 20 million new previously uninsured folks that have been added to the medical rolls. So there's a total of everybody in the United States is supposed to be in the program or have their own insurance. But 20 million of those people were previously uninsured.
Right. So what happens to the 20 million people? They go back to being uninsured? Because if you do private, they're not going to be able to afford it.
Well, what's going to happen, David, I don't think that's going to be the first thing on his list. As someone mentioned earlier in the program about promises, that's not going to be the first thing. That's not going to be the first thing they touch. They're smart enough to know that 20 million people is a pretty significant rebellion. So what they're not going to touch that first. That's not going to be day one. Okay, that's not even going to be day 100. They're going to look for Ryan, the Speaker of the House, to come in with his plan, which he's probably working real hard on. His plan, they're going to try to vote and substitute the Affordable Care Act 1 for Act 2. Act 2 is going to probably be the Speaker of the House's plan, and that's going to probably be similar to the current Affordable Care Act, with the exception of some modifications where they think improvements would be. That's the way I think you're going to see it go.
This TV
David?
Programs, yes. Go ahead, Ron.
I have to say one thing, because I do have coverage right now under the Affordable Care Act, and I thank God that I have that, because I have – you know, some medical issues going on and I need to take medication. And if it weren't for that, I don't know what I would do. So, you know, thank you, Obama. And I know that there's a lot of people, I mean, no system is perfect. I understand that. And I know that there's a lot of people out there, including my two brothers, who criticize, you know, let's just say Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. They criticize it. But yet when you challenge them and say, well, what's wrong with it, they don't really have an answer. And you know, I've noticed that of everybody that I ask, well, what's so wrong with Obamacare? Why isn't it working? Nobody really has a straightforward answer. So it has worked beautifully for me. You know, it's less than I actually and I wasn't uninsured. I was one of the lucky ones, I guess. I was in transition. I had been laid off from my last job, and I was 3 months without a job. Thank God I have a job now, so my new health insurance through my workplace kicks in January 1st. But for 3 months, and currently, I still have the Affordable Care Act. And to me, you know, I looked and I compared prices to see what it would cost if I just did it on my own with Florida Blue. And, you know, I looked at a bunch of different companies. And there is no way that I could have even found anything that compares in terms of the affordability of what I got, you know, and I actually have pretty good coverage, you know, low deductible and all of that. So I don't see anything wrong with Obamacare. You know, I understand now that Trump is not going to try to get rid of it in its entirety, but only parts of it. So I think maybe he's starting to understand that, you know, this is something that millions and millions of Americans depend on.
Right.
You know, hey, David, you know, I thank God for Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. Because when I left Clear Channel, my insurance would have been about $2,000 for me and my family, my wife and I. And there was no way I could afford that. Now, when I was working for Clear Channel, we were paying in something like $1,500, even with a major company like that, a month. But the thing is, that's why Romney is being entertained. That's why Romney is being entertained in the cabinet, because he did the Affordable Care Act in the state that he represented, and he knows a lot about it. Now, if he's able to eat his words that he said about Don Trump, we'll see that. But that's why they're courting him. And I don't think he'll be able to touch that Affordable Care Act, because there's just too many people benefiting from it. He may tweak it, but he's got to look at what's working and what's not working.
Which is what Clinton was saying in the debates. And I think he's listening to her talk in the debates, really.
Yes. And then when he went to visit President Obama at the White House, he had a revelation sitting in that chair.
Wow. All right. One of the things, and I was talking to Ron earlier in the week, and we were talking about the Trump candidacy and Muslim people. And I was reading an article that said Muslims in America will find that Trump is, they will be like Jews to Hitler in terms of the way they will be treated. And then I was talking to Ron about this. Ron, if you don't mind, can you tell me a little bit about what your brother told you, what he feels?
Yeah, my brother is actually kind of scaring me a little bit right now, because he and his girlfriend are under the impression now, and I don't know how this all came about, but they are under the impression that the entire world is going to be overtaken and overrun by Muslims, and that it's already happening. And then he brought up Dearborn, Michigan, which I didn't know about, so I looked it up. And yes, there's a large Muslim community in Dearborn, but my brother was saying that, you know, that they're anti-American, they're anti Christianity, and that anybody that tries to go in there, you know, they get beaten up or even killed. I mean, so my brother is, you know, like an extremist on the other side of the coin, and you know, but he's really fearing that that the Muslim population, and he keeps sending me video after video that, you know, that it's become a problem in many of the European countries, that they've basically overtaken France and England and Germany, and he says the same thing is going to happen here. So I'm like, where are you getting your figures? You know, so I looked up, you know, because he was saying there's 9 million Muslims in the U.S. So I looked it up, and I saw, you know, something from last year from Pew Charitable Trust, which, you know, is a much more respectable than I think the sources that they're citing. And Pew says that there's, I think, roughly 1 million Muslims in the country right now, and that by 2020, that it's only going to be about 2 million. So, you know. But the reason I say this is because I think, you know, and he voted for Trump, and I think this is the fear that, you know, while Trump was running for president, this is the fear that he instilled in a lot of Americans that don't know better and don't know otherwise and are getting their news from, you know, from lack of a better word, crappy sources, you know. And by the way, my brother says the mainstream media is behind all of it, and that's why they don't report it.
Wow. Okay. What do you think about that? Who's that?
Well, this is Frank. Let me tell you one of the things. The ultra-right and right-wing people have discussed and pointed their followers towards there are non-police zones or in the past in areas like France and Belgium. There are areas that were hardcore Muslim minorities, and they had the police had agreements not to go in there and do policing, okay? And their racial situation in Europe is different than our racial situation. In Europe, in France, it's not about your color as far as the nation is concerned. It's about France, you being French. And the problem with that is they don't want you wearing a head garb in France. That's against the law, even though you might wear it. Other than inside your house, okay? So there's no accommodation for your religious practice. If you were in the military, that would be similar to what used to happen in our military. There's no accommodation for your religious presence and everything. And so as a result of that, they are less closer to their minority population than we are in the United States. They have open borders. So the European deal is that you can come, once you're in the European Union, you have free travel just like we do in the United States from any state to reside or whatever. Now, there are people in our country who want to have a holy war. They want to have a war along religious lines. The problem I have with that is we aren't a religious country. But we do have church officials who are talking about Christians in Muslim residential areas in the Middle East being persecuted. So the word persecuted is used an awful lot. Trump would be an ideal person to get this war thing on, because what they want to do is go back to the Crusades. Okay.
Wow.
And so, from my perspective, that's why they criticized the president about not using the term, Muslim extremist. All right. They want to tie this thing into Christian Muslim. And then we've got these people running around with white sheets on their heads who consider themselves Christians. And this is all part of the play that your brother has been getting and receiving. My thing is that I don't want to get into a fight with someone along religious lines, because the beginning of the Christian religion comes from the Judeo religion, and the Muslim religion is also comes from the Jewish roots. And so they're all come from the same roots. But if you listen to these religious zealots that we have in the United States, some of them are called evangelicals, they will tell you that the Muslim religion is a not a clean religion. They'll use terminology that's very provocative. And but they're all, we all are sourced from this Judeo religion. With the different twists and turns. Okay, so they use the Bible in the Muslim faith, and they use the Quran, and we use the Old Testament and the New Testament. So you can go to a Muslim temple and read the Old Testament in one of their books as well as we can in ours.
Wow.
Yeah, I think his girlfriend happens to be Jehovah's Witness. So I don't know, but I think that may have some influence over the way.
Right, and that's that's a real extreme segment of the population who doesn't even follow the normal Christian, the standardized Christian precepts.
Well, I sent out a once again, you're listening to The Man's Voice, and if you would like to join in this conversation, give us a call at 646-668-8740. I get lots of comments from people who say, well, we're listening, but they don't want to talk, you know, they're afraid to get on. Well, a lot of people are listening through their computers and phones, so they feel they can't make that touch. But do, we want to hear what you have to say to this conversation. I know that we're saying things that you probably have thoughts about wanting to join in. So please do at 646-668-8740. I sent out...
David, repeat that number again, please.
Okay. 646-668-8740. And someone will come on the line and ask you, would you like to make a comment or something? And they'll be talking just to you, although it'll sound like you're on the radio, but you won't be. So don't be afraid. I sent out a memo to most of the panel and to several people that I saw. It came from the Myrtle Beach Craigslist. It's kind of a scary article. And I'm going to read it to you. It says, white men ready for war. I already have organized over 350 men from Horry, Georgetown, and Charleston County, reaching out to more brothers who are ready to be part of an organized defense. Yes, defense. We must defend and fight for our president, Mr. Trump, and fight for our white families. As to date, the races, blacks, Latinos, and immigrants have been protesting, or shall I say rioting. We need to go to where they are rioting and engage. Please be prepared for war and blood, for we shall honorably fight for our president. Not only do we stand for our president, but we must sacrifice our lives for our president. No more letting the other side riot and speak badly about our president and us. Email for info. Be prepared to start physical training. Now, I read that and I'm thinking, that sounds, you know, that. And then I look at the when you go on Facebook and you read this article and you read all the comments, most of the comments are from the other side saying, don't think that we're not going to be ready to handle you when you get out there. So, you know, it's like a mini riot going on Facebook already. But this kind of rhetoric from a president, you know, I mean, supporting, is that our future? And if it is, it's going to not be a good 4 years. What do you want to say about that, Don?
I think it's a sign of the rhetoric that is to come based upon not denouncing Duke and other supremacists and organizations like that. And racism has always been here, but it's going to rear its ugly head in a big fashion over the next 4 years if we don't get a handle on this thing. I have a meeting coming up with the Broward Sheriff Department on things that we can do to be proactive on things like this. And you know what gets me, David, is we're not listening. We're not listening to this millennial generation and the generation of that young man that wrote that. I think it's going to get worse if we don't get a handle on this thing.
Can't get any better, because one thing I do know is that the young minorities and, you know, Hispanics and whatever he called them, immigrants and stuff, are not the ones of the past. They're the ones of the future. And, you know, like we had during slavery time, you couldn't do anything. Right now, they're free to do whatever they want to do as well as the other person. So it's, you know, it's going to be a clash. And I think it's going to come to a clash before it gets better. What do you think about that, Ron? I think he got quiet. I don't want to talk about that one.
No, I'm here. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm on mute. I think yes. There has always been racism in this country, but I think Trump has incited so much hatred in so many people that I don't see it getting better. In fact, I think to some degree he has legitimized, you know, some of these people, and now they're thinking that, you know, hey, the president is behind me, so I can do these things, and I can hate these groups of people, and I can, you know, do bad things to them. And you know, these are people that, for the most part, don't have a high degree of education. You know, obviously, I guess maybe there's exceptions, like in everything. But, you know, it's a huge segment of this country, as we talked about in a previous show, that is not located on the coastal, you know, the big states and the coastal big cities that think this way. And, you know, I thought my brother, you know, he's a smart guy, you know, he's got a master's degree, and yet, you know, he's starting to say things that are along those lines. And, you know, it's scary to me that even in my own family, there's people that think some of these things.
Right. What about you, Don? What do you? I know that you talked about that a little bit, but what I don't see happening is anybody going down. I think I see a clash, especially among the younger generation. Although I think the younger generation was moving toward each other, you know, getting rid of all these prejudiced thoughts and stuff. They were moving toward each other, but now I kind of see some tension because, you know, about, say a year ago, the football teams and everything were all integrated. I mean, the schools are now. So I saw a meshing, you know, and us moving on. But right now I feel a tension of some of the younger ones hearing the older ones talk like this and feel that now I can be like this so I can get some credit from my family. And I think we're heading in the wrong direction. What do you think, Don?
You know, David, you used the right word when you said clash. That's the word. It's going to be a clash because the thing is, we got this generation that we have not been listening to. They want to be heard, and nobody's listening to them. And the thing is, they have nothing to lose, David. Donald Trump told us, you have nothing to lose. So you got a lot of people out there saying, I'll make a name for myself. I want to make a name for myself. I'll go down in history as to doing this and doing that. Although it's negative, but I have nothing to lose. We just had 5 police officers shot over the last 2 weeks. 5.
Right. And this generation don't mind shooting you.
No.
Unfortunately.
There were 10 people shot in New Orleans today.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I don't know where it's going to go, but and the one thing to save everybody is religion, but I don't hear the ministers talking. And that bothers me that, you know, I don't hear the ministers teaching or directing or out there in the streets. I don't see that going on right now. And I hope it does happen, but I don't see where it's happening. I know that where you are, Don, there's some of that going on. You're trying to reach out, but you're probably the one, you know, you're the one bright light of that. And I don't know what else is going on. I know in Miami, Ron, Don, you are getting out in the streets and trying to open doors. And we congratulate you and your ministry for that. I can see some of the stuff on the webpage, the stuff that you're doing. But it's going to take more than just one little community doing that. It's going to take.
David, you know something? America has a heart problem, and you cannot legislate the heart of man. We got a heart problem.
Right. All right. We've got about a few seconds left. I did get some.
Hey, David,
mail.
Yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Frank, just real quick. I don't think that the issue you just brought up, I don't think that's going to be the biggest issue. I think the biggest issue is going to be war as a nation involved with the Middle East or the Soviet Union. And I see that's what I think might be looming, because we have Chinese and the Chinese are going to take over the Western Pacific, because it looks like we're not going to engage. And then we've got them, the North Koreans, the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union, in regard to trying to annex back its small countries that are now part of NATO. So I see conflict, but I see big conflict elsewhere.
All right. We're getting end of it. And I want to thank the panelists and thank the people who are listening. And I want, you know, as we move along into Christmas, I want to men to think about this. I find that when you tell your kid, "Do you know I love you?" that they look at you strange and that didn't know. So try that next week, or try it during this holiday period. Just stop and tell your kid, "Do you know that I love you?" and get their expression, and we hope to hear from you next week. Everyone have a good week. Thanks for being here today. And as we move along, I will hope that you call in and talk to us, and panelists, you guys have a nice week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Have a great week.
All right. Bye. Second round.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
I think this was one of the better shows.
you're beginning to say that every week. You know that, right? Yeah, because everybody was more relaxed, more talking, you know. It was we're finally getting used to each other.
Yeah.
I hate to put you on
the show. Don't you think the show was good?
Yeah, and I was waiting for you to cuss me out about putting you on the spot.
No, I was wondering if you put me on the spot if it's something I know about.
Right. Well, it just came to me, you know, because I wrote down what we were talking about, and then it was on my pad, and I said, well, I hope Ron don't mind if I say this.
No, I think so too. We're finally getting there.